somehow occupy your mind. You fight the hurt when you're alone. Seems as though reality dropped another life at your feet. Now that you face another day, it leaves you feeling like you'd like to take it home. Your eyes see things and say, no way. Feels like there's an enemy in everyone who loves you.
Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in the medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them and their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So he poured his libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say Ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, I hope all is well with you today. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you wanted to do, needed to do, must do, should do, better do, and can do. And I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. And of course, if it wasn't, I know, brothers and sisters, you got it done anyways, because that's what time it is. Get it done. I'm hoping that you're enjoying the month of February, African and American African History Month, as I like to call it. Of course, it's called Black History Month, you know, and what I try to do is get that word black out of our vocabulary. But I know that's kind of tough because of all the things that are have gone on. All the interpolation, all of the confusion, all of the other stuff that has gone on as a result of European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege. And as a consequence of that, we are confused. You know, as Neely Fuller said, if you do not understand this system, then everything else you think you understand will only confuse you. And I maintain that we are so confused that we're confused in our confusion, and that's how confused we are. And the only thing that will eliminate that confusion is the understanding and the acquiring of knowledge, knowledge of self, elevating your consciousness will help you understand all of the slings and arrows that are thrown in your path. And so you can make wise decisions. You know who you are. Last night on Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, they had a guest on, Dr. Jerome Fox. Dr. Jerome Fox's book is Addicted to White, The Oppressed in League with the Oppressor. And it was a very good conversation. One that we definitely need to have consistently, because it brings understanding and clarity to our problems and issues that we are confronted with. So, to me, it's vitally important that we have these discussions, that we look at one another. Number one, we look at ourselves, then we look at one another with the same respect that we should and must have. So, I really enjoyed that conversation and look forward to hearing more from Dr. Fox. He's going to get his book. But also, too, you know, we have Dr. Bridges who's on here, and he's he has a book. He has a book, Reclaiming, Recapturing the African Mind. Recapturing the African Mind. And that's what this book deals with as well. That's what this program deals with, because it is all about the mind. We are at war for the minds of our people. That's why I end this program with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the European, the Caucasian, the oppressor, is the minds of the oppressed. The mind. So, you can join this conversation. You can dial 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. And this is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All times that I'm going to give in the rundown of other programs here on Time for an Awakening are Eastern Times. And so we're here every Monday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. And with my good friend, Brother Kwaku, we're going to set up that archive piece. And so any of the programs that you would like to hear again, you'll be able to do that on Time for an Awakening and Black Talk Radio Network. It is Monday, so this evening they have a program called Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8. Program out of Philadelphia, talk program out of Philadelphia, dealing with issues in their community and nationally and globally. And then Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9, which is also a podcast. Let's Buy Black. So when you go on the website of Time for an Awakening, you can check out Let's Buy Black visibly 365. I'm going to do that too one of these days real soon. Do a podcast. Wednesdays. On Wednesday, it is POC. That's right, brothers and sisters, Sister POC with Revive. Wednesdays from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. On Thursdays, Us Lifting Us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people, in the spirit of Ujamaa, cooperative economics, as we like to say, family-centered economics, ULU, from 9 p.m. They've been on only about an hour, but they do have a program from 9 to 11. They may start doing it from 2. We'll see. But one of the most important things that are happening with Us Lifting Us is the opening of Cafe ULU here in Atlanta, 2036 Sylvan Road at the Sylvan Plaza here in Atlanta. Very easy to get to, right off the interstate and Georgia Highway 166 and Sylvan Road. You're right there. And we're going to make coffee our specialty. It is a coffee house. And we're going to have Tanzanian coffee, Cameroonian, Kenyan, Ethiopian, Brazilian. We have coffee because coffee is indigenous African. It started in Ethiopia. So we got coffee. And I'll highlight that a little bit later in the program. The website, of course, to go to is Cafe ULU, CafeULU.com. CafeULU.com. Or you can go to the Us Lifting Us website, which, of course, is usliftingus.com. And to call the cafe is 470-788-8124. You can call and find out what they have and have them ready for you when you get there. 470-788-8124. Cafe ULU. On Fridays, after my program, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, 8 p.m. And then Saturday Sports Talk with Brother Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And hopefully this Saturday for sure, we're going to get Dr. Rogers on the air right here on Time for an Awakening. Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. And Sundays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. No, it is not Brother Oshie and African Perspectives. It is Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness, with Revive from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sunday. And Sunday evening, 7 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Like I said, had a great program last night. Also, too, for Us Lifting Us, the 5th Annual Power Summit next month, March 16th and 17th, right here in Atlanta. On the 16th, we will meet at the cafe on the 16th, Friday the 16th, and then on the 17th, on Saturday the 17th, at the Atlanta Technical College on Metropolitan Boulevard, and that is from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. Some outstanding information that will be given. Economically and cultural wise. So check it out. It's free and open to the public. So we're going to talk today. My good friend, Brother DJ, will be calling real soon. We're going to talk about this month being African and American African History Month, or as we say, Black History Month. I wanted to highlight people that we don't normally hear about in our history, those men and women, particularly educators, historians, as well as psychologists. And today it is Dr. Amos Wilson. I highlight Dr. Amos Wilson. Dr. Amos Wilson was born in Hattiesburg, Mississippi in 1941. In fact, his birthday is the 23rd, which is Friday. He would have been 77 years old. He died January 14th in 1995 at the age of 53. He would be 77 this Friday. He attended Morehouse College and then the New School of Social Research, and he got his PhD from Fordham University in New York. In psychology, sociology, and African studies. And one of his big influences, like a lot, most of us who are Pan-Africanists, the biggest influence is Marcus Garvey. You know, if you are loving some of the more contemporary Pan-Africanists today, then you must understand that their influence is Marcus Garvey. You know, he completed his undergrad degree, as I said, at Morehouse here in Atlanta, and he got his master's from the New School of Social Research, and then his PhD from Fordham in New York, and he's worked as a psychologist, a social worker, supervising probation officer, and a training administrator in the city of New York. In the juvenile justice system. As an academician, Wilson also taught at City College in New York from 81 to 86, and then at the College of New Rochelle from 87 to the time of his transition. Wilson believed that the vast power differential between Africans and non-Africans was a major social problem of the 21st century. He believed these power differentials, and not simply Caucasian racist attitudes, was chiefly responsible for the existence of racism and the continuing domination of people of African descent across the globe, around the world. As a scholar of Africana studies, Wilson felt that the social, political, and economic problems that Africans faced the world over were unlike those of other groups. And thus, he argued that the concept of equal education ought to be abandoned in favor of a philosophy and approach of appropriate to our own needs. Wilson argued that the function of education and intelligence was to solve the problem, particularly to a people and a nation, and to secure that people and nation's biological survival. Any philosophy of education or approach which fails to do so was inadequate. Wilson further argued that the methodology and the mythical notion of progress to which many American Africans subscribe was a false one, that integration could only occur and persist as a social economic reality as long as the United States and global economies continue to expand. In such an economic situation, where every were to ever reverse or chance for the worse, then the consequences would could follow end up resulting in increased racial conflict. Thus, he argued American Africans to consider disintegration as a realistic possibility to prepare for a hypothetical scenario with the understanding that integration was not guaranteed to last forever. Wilson also believed that racism was structurally and institutionally driven phenomenon derived from the inequities of power relationships between groups and could persist even if and when more overt expressions of it were no longer present. Racism then could only be neutralized by transforming society structurally in the system of power relationships. And that's, well, of course, he wrote the blueprint for Black Power, the development of psychology of the black child in 78, Black on Black Violence, the psychodynamics of black self-annihilation in service to white domination. Love that book. Understanding Black Male Adolescent Violence and Prevention and Remediation in 92. Awakening the Natural Genius of the Black Child in 1992 as well. The Falsification of African Consciousness, Eurocentric History, Psychiatry, and the Politics of White Supremacy. Very good book. Blueprint for Black Power, a Moral, Political, and Economic Imperative for the 21st Century. African-Centered Consciousness versus the New World Order, Garveyism in the Age of Globalism. The Developmental Psychology of the Black Child, a second edition. Issues of Manhood in Black and White, an Inclusive Look at Masculinity and its Social. See, the last two books were after his death. In fact, the last three were after his death, and he died in 95. But they were published after our brother made his transition in 95. This is taken from the Falsification of African Consciousness. The idea that we must necessarily arrive at a point greater than that reached by our ancestors could possibly be an illusion. The idea that somehow, according to some great universal principle, we are going to be in a better condition than our ancestors is an illusion which often results from not studying history and recognizing that progressions and regressions occur, that integration and disintegrations occur in history. We have to understand as ebbs and flows. Dr. Amos Wilson. We're going to listen to Dr. Amos Wilson, his words. I think a lot of times that gives a good perspective on African culture. This is on African culture, Dr. Amos Wilson.
Looking at the question, what is culture? Horton and Hunt said from their life experiences, a group develops a set of rules and procedures for meeting their needs. The set of rules and procedures together with a supporting set of ideas and values is called a culture. To a great extent, you see, a culture involves a set of rules and a procedure for meeting needs. And this is the thing we have to keep in mind. You don't have a culture just to have a culture. And you don't claim a culture just because it's a culture or just because it's African. The ultimate thing that culture must do is solve problems. That's why people evolve a culture. That's why a culture comes into existence as a way of what? Solving problems and meeting needs. That's why, at a certain point, when a culture no longer meets the needs of a people or solves the problem confronting a people, that culture must be transformed. There's nothing sacred about holding a culture in the face of, you know, new events and new changes. Unless, of course, you're free to do that if you're willing also to accept suicide or death. And you have that right to that choice. You know, I tell people, you know, we have the right to say, look, we're going to hold on to this culture even if it kills us. But we should be what? Very conscious of our decision. We should not be holding on to it out of a misunderstanding of what culture is supposed to do. Ultimately, culture is supposed to solve problems and to meet the needs of the people. And a culture then has to be measured against those standards. Does this culture meet our needs? Does it solve our problems? Chancellor Weaver, in a sense, then looked at the African cultures, looked at African characteristics, and looked at them in terms of in what way did they meet our needs and in what way did they deal with the slave trade and colonialism and the other kind of things that happened to us as African people. And after going through that, then he set up what? The plan, which a lot of people don't read. Which is the whole point of what? That's the whole point of the book. Not the first part, but really the second part. Looking at our culture and our history critically, he then, and looking at our situation and where we are today as a result of that history and of those cultures, he then draws out a map for a plan, a way for us to what? Get out of our situation and to restore African civilization and to restore African people. But it's at that point most people sort of move on to something else. Mm-mm. This is the place you must study. We're going to include that in our power of studies, by the way. That plan along with some others. The sets and rules and procedures together with a supporting set of ideas. Cultures are not just ways people sing and dance and what they eat and how they dress and the rituals and so forth that they perform. These ways of behaving and dressing and so forth are based on sets of ideas and values. And ultimately, in a deeper sense, it's this set of ideas and values that lay the basis for culture. Clarkhorn and anthropologists indicated that culture and he defined culture as all the historically created designs for living, explicit and implicit, rational, irrational, and non-rational, which may exist at any given time as potential guides for the behavior of man, for the behavior of the people. In other words, culture creates designs as a result of its history for living and provides guides for its members, guides for behaving. As a set of the guides for guiding the behavior of its members, a culture provides standards of proper cognitive, emotional, and behavioral conduct. Culture provides a set of norms and concepts of what is to be expected to exist, why we expect them to exist. Though culture is a product of actual experience, culture is essentially ideological, meaning that it essentially exists in the mind, because culture ultimately is based on the sharing of beliefs and customs and expectations. We receive our culture as a result of, as a part of our social heritage. To the degree that the individual identifies or is at one with this culture, and to the degree to which the members of a culture identify with it, culture is represented in the minds of its people. In other words, we have to recognize deeply that culture cannot exist outside of ourselves. It only can exist in our minds and in our bodies as a people. And therefore, to a great extent, it is ideological more than it is physical, more than it is behavioral, more than it is just ways of dressing. Ultimately, a culture must be represented in the very minds of a people. And it is only through its representation as a mental entity that a people can identify with the culture. A culture is a way of thinking, a way of attending the world, of perceiving the world, of classifying and categorizing the world, of ordering the world, of processing information, and of evaluating the world. When we say then that the Europeans decultured us or distorted our culture, we are also saying then that the Europeans have distorted our modes of attending, the world, our modes of experiencing the world, our modes of classifying and categorizing the world, our modes of processing information that comes from the world. So there's no little wonder then that we are having problems in what some people call education, particularly as it is European, Eurocentrically designed, that our children are perceived as having problems in thinking skills and math skills and science skills and so forth. Because ultimately, you see, culture provides you with a frame for thinking. It provides you with a structure for organizing information, for classifying information, for evaluating information, you see, for processing information. And when you distort a people's culture, then you distort their capacity to appropriately organize information and deal with it. And this is what has happened to us. This is the reason why I say again and again that the problem of education, in terms of the problems our children have in schools, are not education problems. They are political. They only express themselves as educational problems. The problems our children may have in paying attention, thinking so-called logically, categorizing, classifying, in terms of vocabulary and so forth, are really not academic problems. They are cultural problems, and they are the result of political interactions. Because in transforming our sense of who we are and what we are, and in transforming our culture, so was our thinking and so forth transformed as well. This is why ultimately the educational problems of our people will have to be solved in terms of cultural transformation, not just in terms of educational technique, you see. And this is what the whites try to lay on us. You know, we're going to discover finally that great reading technique. Children can learn almost in any way you teach them. But it's about more than technique. It must be a part of a total cultural structure. And the children must come with a cultural intentionality, because no technique is going to matter if they pay no mind, if they have no interest, you see, if their culture has given them little or no reason for learning what is to be taught, if what they're learning is really not relevant to their situation and their circumstances. And so we have to understand very much how culture itself structures the thought processes. Now, there are some of you who are saying, but there are those of us who knew nothing about African culture and we got all A's in school and so forth and so on. Remember this, though. We got these A's in school and we went through these schools at the price of...
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, at the price of our own culture, our own mindsets, putting what was African to the rear and embracing the dominant culture. And of course, what has hindered us for so long is our alienation from the dominant culture, making us feel as if who we are and what we are from is inferior and no good. You have to understand, this is not, you know, there's no such thing as race. Race is a human construct. There's no such thing as race biologically. But socially, there is. But what word you can use in place of race is culture. Because that's what happened. Europeans imposed their culture on everyone. The fact that many people don't wear their countries or their cultural dress when you see men in suits and ties, it's become that dominance of European ideology makes brothers and sisters dress European because of the imposition of their culture. And nobody has suffered mightily under this assault than Africans. Because of Europeans imposing their culture on us, but yet denying full participation within the culture. In fact, being alienated and dominated by the culture, you see the consequences today. And not just here in America, it's global. It's global. And it has influenced other cultures to disrespect and degrade and dehumanize African culture and more deeply African people. Because if you deny and denigrate the culture is the people. You're going to do that to the people. And because we have been here for so long, that's why I keep saying, y'all, 1619 to 2019, 400 years, we really, really need to have a Pan-African conference globally to look at the Europeans. Well, number one, it started even before then. So the 1619 is an American date that needs to be discussed because, you know, they have been imposing their culture and dogging out Africans longer than that. And one thing I think we know is that one thing about European culture, which is a very violent culture, it's extremely violent. It's also sexist. In fact, European culture has been said is rape culture. And how do we derive at making that statement? History. Malik Shabazz says, of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward our research. History. Look at the history of the European. Look at the history of the European in its initial awakening of Greece, its awakening after Greece of Rome, its medieval period, and the influence of the Moors or Africans with the religion of Islam in the western part of Asia or western part of Europe. Look at the history of the so-called Renaissance of the European and its exploration and eventual exploitation and taking of land. The genocide that on groups of people, its development of superior weaponry, which facilitated their rise to the power position that they hold today, and continue to develop weapons that at this very moment could blow this planet up. They always believe, and you know, it's been stated that nature would correct everything so that if the Caucasian would do something like that, and considering the mindset of some of these folks who believe that they can go ahead and use nuclear weapons because we have them, well, why can't we use them? We got them. Well, they're just supposed to be for a deterrent. Well, that's why, to me, I have no problem with North Korea having weapons, considering what the United States did to North Korea. And then when North Korea looked at what Libya, what happened to Libya, and what happened to Iraq, who gave their weapons up. Yeah, exactly. Look at them today. So North Korea said, we ain't giving up nothing. We understand these folks. So, in listening to some of our theorists, me being a Pan-Africanist, I believe, and I know Africa is messed up, and I understand that. But the whole idea is there's African thinkers on the continent who are Pan-Africanists. They're not in the leadership. But I think the movement towards an independent Africa and a coming together of Africans to control their land and resource and provide for people is on the horizon. I understand that today in Africa, the neo-colonialists, the puppets, you know, when I don't know about you, if you haven't heard about it or haven't seen it, you need to look at what happened in Zimbabwe with the old lion being disposed, which of course is Robert Mugabe. I don't even know the name of the person who took over, but when that person took over and I seen that piece when he gave land back to Caucasian, gave land back. And then all these Africans running up to these Caucasians, hugging them, kissing, all like, oh, we're so glad. It was probably one of the more sickening things I've seen. And then when he stated, we're going to go back into the European Union or the British Commonwealth. We want to be a part again of the British Commonwealth. Yeah. Our problem, of course, stems from, as Dr. Amos Wilson consistently told us, that we have these issues. That we have these issues that are hard for us. And the knowledge that we have and the problems and issues that we have continue to haunt us. We have another piece here I'm going to play. Dr. Amos Wilson. This is a piece. Also, too, dear brothers and sisters, you know I'm always advocating for you to go to YouTube, because by going to YouTube, you can let the ancestors speak. There are plenty of stuff on YouTube of all of our people. And that's where I get these things from. So you can do it too. Some of these things are, you know, an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours long, some of them. You know, full presentations, all kinds of good stuff. And to me, it's important that we hear. Because I know some of us don't want to take the time to read, you know. You can go through the whole book of Blueprint for Black Power in 3 hours on YouTube, you know. But here's Dr. Amos Wilson on false knowledge.
It's not enough just to have the skills to process information. You see, and to organize it, you got to organize it for a reason, to achieve a particular point, to satisfy some value, some wish, or some need. You see, I was looking at a discussion here the other evening with a very esteemed public intellectual, who apparently had the capacity to reason and think very well. He's been educated in philosophy. And who has apparently a good deal of knowledge. They were supposed to be talking about alternatives to black problems and black leadership. And I didn't see one black problem discussed at all during that little 2 hours. No issue confronted the black community was dealt with at all. Oh, but there was plenty of reasoning. There was plenty of knowledge being displayed there and so forth. But nothing in the sense of applying it to the end of liberating black folk. Applying it to the end of gaining freedom and enhancing the quality of life of black folk. You see, so even though you may have the knowledge and the not quite enough yet. You have to value African people. You have to value African liberation. You have to value African people being empowered and free and self-sufficient and doing for self. That has to be a value, so that when you think and when you process what you know, using logic and abstraction and so forth, it will be processed under the direction of trying to achieve those values. So that you are thinking for a reason, not just to be thinking, not just to be displaying knowledge, but you're engaging in the process of the information to achieve a particular point. So therefore, our desires and our needs and our values and our interests and aspirations and ideals. Of your capabilities, don't you? How capable are we of achieving this goal? What kind of knowledge must we have to accomplish this goal? What kind of information must we gather and make a part of our minds and the store of our knowledge in order to accomplish this goal? This is our goal. We want to be free of being ruled by white men. Okay? Now, once you kind of get that together, what kind of mental skills must be what? Developed in order for us to use this knowledge and information to accomplish this end. Do we think abstractly enough? Because these people are very abstract thinkers. Do we think analytically enough? Because their hallmark is analytical thinking, isn't it? Do we think conceptually enough? Because we got to do what? We got to outsmart them. We got to outthink them. You see? And when we looked at ourselves and said, well, our thinking skills are not what they should be and not up to that task, then we recognize we got to go to thinking school, haven't we? We got to go where? And learn and develop. See, that's what a value will do for you. It will say, look, if you want to get this, you better sharpen up this skill, better develop that skill. Do we know how to sit down with other men for 2 or 3 hours or 4 or 5 hours and really think and plan together? Do we know how to stay focused on the subject matter so that we can get something done? Can we subdue our egos and so forth long enough to solve the matter? That we can do it? That so we can get where we want to go? Then we got to learn it if we don't, you see. And we got to keep that goal utmost in mind, so that it can always help us to get back on a task. You see? But you see, if you have no goals other than going to work, eating something, drinking beer, getting sex, then no wonder you can't think. There's no need for thinking and developing thinking skills. If you're addicted to sex and drugs, what do you need to think for? Yeah. If you're satisfied working for a white man on a low-wage job, even a high-wage job, but you need to think about how to create employment for yourself. How different, I tell people, when we see people go to school, we all go to school with one assumption that the white man got jobs out here for us. All we need to do is qualify for them. But the white man doesn't have the jobs out here for us, and he hardly has the job for himself. How different would our education be if we went to school to learn to create jobs for ourselves? How different would our curriculum be if the purpose for our going to school was not to work for white folk, but to work for ourselves and to create jobs for ourselves and to create wealth for ourselves? How different the content of courses would be that we take and so forth? You say, it's not about lowering standards. It's not about changing standards and the way these people talk about it. You see? It's about building up the appropriate standard. It's not about unequal education. It's about what? Appropriate education. It's about looking at the goals of your nation and looking at the goals of your community and deciding what kind of education you need in order to achieve those goals. But the kind of education we're getting today has the goal of working for white people and forever being the white man's servant and slave in some form or another. And therefore, we get a servant's education and a slave's education. And when he has no need for further servants and slaves, going on at this point. Because now he's hiring across the world. Now he imports the workers that he needs. And consequently, he's disinvesting the education of black people in America. And consequently, if you do not engage in the education of yourself and determine what your education is, if we are not engaging our children to make their own job and to make their own world, we are not going to be around much longer as a people. This is what this is about. So then how does this man falsify the consciousness of our children? Falsify it in three ways, then. You can falsify it by giving people false context, false history, false knowledge, irrelevant knowledge. You say.
The voice of Dr. Amos Wilson, a giant in our community, a giant in terms of his love for African people, his willingness to make whatever sacrifices that there are, you know. So I appreciate what Dr. Wilson has tried to do for African people. I appreciate all those men and women who made tremendous sacrifices in their careers, or made that a career, let me put it that way. They went and got the knowledge. They went through the halls of academia and got the knowledge. But they came out whole. They didn't come out worshiping, or as the brother, Dr. Fox said, you know, addicted to white. They didn't come out addicted to white. They understood clearly that the oppressor, the European, the Caucasian, had put something deeply on our minds, on our psyche, which prevented us from thinking logically and clearly, prevented us from embracing ourselves and who we are and what we are. They understood clearly that what the Caucasian has imposed upon us was self-hatred, denial of self, a feeling of inability to come together, a feeling that no matter what, we would never measure up. And then when someone does, because of his or her total acceptance to that system, they hold those individuals up and say, see, you too can do this. You too can be like this. You too can live here. You too can have this job. You too can go to this school. Knowing all along that it would never happen for the majority of our people, or for our people, period. That's what we don't understand. And so there are many of us who are willing to sacrifice our people for their comfort. I often say that many of our people are just looking for a comfortable niche, a comfortable corner in European Caucasian supremacy, European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, because you're right, they are not supreme by nobody's imagination. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And you can call us at 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832, and be a part of the discussion. We're going to take a break. We're going to be right back. Stay with us right here on African Perspectives.
Yeah. Grand Unified Theory. Rational Response Squad's newest member. My name is Great Square, and I'ma always give it to you straight. Check it. Yo, 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 I'm like the atheist spokesman. That's why I come under fire and pressure attacks like Rex Grossman.
Yeah, this game is intense. I've been saying this is agnostic. People been playing the fence. They keep saying it's the same in the sense that evolution requires faith that the universe just came to exist. First of all, microevolution's been proven in the same way that sound waves let you listen to music. And macroevolution is a system of change at or above the level of species inflicted with change. That's microevolution on the grand scale. We can't even word because our lifespan's too short to observe. But carbon dating is flawed. Its half-life is 5,730 years, and that supports our cause. Now that'd be great if we used it to date, but since we don't, then I'ma question that argument's weight. We use potassium argon to date the globe, not carbon 12 or carbon 14, not none of those. So before you attack, great, go get your facts straight, because in the facts race, your God comes in the last place. Believe in gods, we can fix that. Fix that. Irrational thoughts, we get dispatched. Dispatch. It may be hard, but we'll get back. Get back in the position just to end that. End that. Believe in gods, we can fix that. Fix that. Irrational thoughts, we get dispatched. Dispatch. It may be hard, but we'll get back. Get back in the position just to end. Look, that. End that. To battle me, you need to reason clearly. Now, I'm not saying fear me, but at least be versed in punctuated equilibrium theory, grand unified fields, quantum mechanics, and dark planets, with logic that's sharper than the blade of D'Artagnan's to destroy arguments of creationists who can't stand it. Then they try to hit me with the wager. Who? Pascal's wager. Who? Pascal's wager. Now, that's a fool's bet. And against the intelligent, it's useless. Really? You bet. That ain't nothing new. They use it on kids. But for those who don't know, it goes a little like this. Wouldn't you rather believe in God and be wrong than to not believe in God and be wrong? If you believe in God and you're wrong, you lost nothing. But if you don't believe and you're wrong, it's all suffering. The problem is you can try it on anything. Switch the gods around and apply it to anything. The flying spaghetti monster, Zeus, Amen-Ra, Krishna, Odin, Baal, and then Allah. Which one of them's our God? None of them are false. And blame it on the atheists. It's always our fault. Except it never is. So don't get mad at us. We just showing y'all the evidence. Believe in gods, we can fix that. Fix that. Irrational thoughts, we can dispatch. Dispatch. It may be hard, but we'll get back. Get back in the position just to end that. End that. Believe in gods, we can fix that. Fix that. Irrational thoughts, we can dispatch. Dispatch. It may be hard, but we'll get back. Position just to end that, end that, end that. Grand unified theory, rational response squad. I'ma make the fundies hate me. They gon' need a new reason to shut down rap. But they won't shut down rap that degrades women though, huh? They won't shut down rap that talks about selling crack though, huh? Hypocrites. It's all good. Grand Unified. I'm Grand Unified. Grand Unified. Great Square. Grand Unified Theory.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and Black Talk RadioNetwork.com. And of course, we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Tonight, here on Time for an Awakening, is Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8 p.m. And then right after that, Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9, which is also on a podcast. And you can check that out on Time for an Awakening's website. timeforanawakening.com. On Wednesday, Revive with Sister POC from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. And then on Thursdays, Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People with Brother DJ, Baba Kambizi, Baba Akima, Sister Nanana, Sister Shea, and Baba Thurman, all of us good brothers and sisters. And of course, we have the Cafe Ulu is open here in Atlanta. Go check out Brother Ken at Cafe Ulu. And the cafe hours are from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday. And then on Saturdays and Sundays, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And, of course, Cafe Ulu has a coffee house and roaster. Cafe Ulu will provide the finest freshly roasted coffees and specialty beverages and pastries in a warm, clean, relaxing environment with the friendliest service. That's right. We have Wi-Fi there. It's Wi-Fi is free. It will be a gathering spot in our community for our brothers and sisters because we believe in community and uplifting African people in every freshly brewed cup of coffee that we make. Free trade, no pesticides, international cooperative farming, local and international businesses, co-op membership, family-centered economics, because we are us lifting us. Coffee selections are from Cameroon, Tanzania, Kenya, Ethiopia, and more to come. So check us out, Us Lifting Us. That is in the Sylvan Plaza, 2036 Sylvan Road. And I said earlier, you can check us out at Cafe Ulu, CafeUlu.com, CafeUlu.com, or on our website, usliftingus.com. If you want to call, if you're in the Atlanta area, you can call and get your coffee ready for you when you get there at 470-788-8124. That's Cafe Ulu. And, of course, on Friday, we have Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. That's 8 p.m. on Friday. And Saturday, Sports Talk with Brother Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon on Saturdays. And then Saturday, early afternoon or later afternoon, put it that way, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., Black Reality Think Tank. On Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Revive with Sister POC. And then Sunday evening, Time for an Awakening. You can give us a call here at 215-490-9832. And join the conversation. We're talking today about one of our great educators, psychologist, historian, a brother who was no nonsense, Dr. Amos Wilson. Dr. Wilson clearly understood it was all about the African mind. That if we can change the way we look at ourselves, we can change the way we think, that if we can step outside of the imposed boundaries that Europeans have put on us, if we could just get outside of that and look at that situation for what it is, not that we are going to change it or challenge it. Challenge it in the respect of breaking the tie, of letting loose, of letting go. We're not going to change what they do, how they think, and what they do. We have to change ourselves and how we think and how we respond to what they do. This is what Dr. Wilson was saying. It is about the African mind. And not just here in the United States, but globally. To me, here in the United States, one could make an argument that it should be easier for us to do with the availability of all the information and the technology that we have at our disposal. There is no way in hell that you should not know about these great people because it's right there. You can go online. You can go to the library, put on some damn headphones, and go to YouTube and listen to Dr. Clark. Listen to Francis Cress Welsing. Listen to Amos Wilson. Listen to Chancellor Williams. You can listen to Marcus Garvey. It is all right there for us. Brothers and sisters, it is vitally important. Vitally important. If we are going to change the dynamics, if we're going to prepare ourselves for all the problems that we are up against, it is vitally important that we do this. I'm saying clearly, just like Dr. Amos Wilson said clearly, this attack, this constant attack that we have been under will not abate, will not subside until we make it happen. It is incumbent upon us. Nobody is going to do this for us. Nobody is going to do this for us but us. We have to change the way we think about ourselves and each other. Then once that change takes place, we must educate. There's no doubt about it that the education that we need is outside of the public school system, because the public school system is funded by the public. And that means the people who pay taxes, and it could be all kinds of ethnicities, all kinds of types of Americans. They pay for that. They're willing. That's why I was in favor of the school choice program and the opportunity for us to develop schools to educate our children. I think that is vitally important. But also, too, I understand that there are restrictions, and there are also some dictates by the various states for those systems. And I'm more in favor now of developing independent schools, independent institutions that we support, so we can give the right kind of education, and not just to our young people, but this is also should be given to adults. Because these institutions are going to be about nation building. These institutions are going to prepare us to take control of our lives, to end all of the craziness that we experience, all of the materialism and greed and violence that we experience. There is no doubt about it that this Caucasian has created the face of violence to be us. There is no doubt about it. If you ask somebody who's the most violent people in America, they're not going to say Europeans, Caucasians, crackers, white folk. Almost to the letter, asking us or anybody outside of us, asking Latinos or Hispanics, asking rival immigrants, anybody, you ask them, who are the most violent people in America? And they'll tell you, Black people. We're the most feared because of this violence. We should be feared because of our intellect. We should be feared because of our capacity to throw off the yoke of oppression and so forth. But no. We're feared because of our hot tempers and our anger and our frustration, which we blame on ourselves and we blame one another. We don't challenge and look at the Caucasian for who and what they are and do what we must do. We don't do it. We don't do it. We challenge each other, which of course has created that metaphor of the crab in the barrel syndrome. We challenge each other in a system that is not ours. And by challenging each other in a system that is not ours, that hatred towards one another happens, because we want to be in this system. We want to be a part of this culture. And so we do whatever we can do, whatever is possible for us to do, to be a part of this. And Dr. Amos Wilson was saying to us, here is the information. He had a number of books. He had a number of books that explained our condition. He had a number of presentations that you can listen to. If you're just joining us, We're talking about Dr. Amos Wilson. We're during this month.
This call is being recorded.
During this month, we're going to be talking about men and women that usually, well, my focus will be on men and women who are historians or scholars, men and women who are psychologists. Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, we'll talk about her and others. And, of course, we'll probably extend this way into the next month, because really our history is not just this month, although the focus should be this month. We should do something specific this month. You should do something with your family that focuses on this month, you know. But our history and the influences of our history on us should be with us 24/7, 365. And that's why it's important that you, we have a caller. I'm going to take a caller. Good afternoon, caller 267. Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, Brother Oshie. Sorry for the background noise. I'm on one of these atrocious highways that needs infrastructure out here.
Yeah, that's a lot of them, brother.
Man, I tell you, man, this is pretty pathetic when you're driving on a United States highway and actually damage your vehicle driving on these things.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah. The roads, the bridges, and so forth, the potholes, all of that. And this man wants to talk about building a damn wall.
Yeah. Well, you know what's behind that. If he build the wall, some of his billionaire buddies going to get a cut.
That's for sure.
Build an imaginary border. That's all that's about, brother.
That's for sure.
You know, and all those fools that believe in that nut, they can't even see past it.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, folks I work with, some of my clients, I tell them real quick, man, if you don't know this dude ain't nothing about business, then you need to go back and take a look at yourself. And I'm telling all of them. Matter of fact, all of them, even that creep that just left the White House a year ago.
Yeah.
Nothing. It's all about business, man.
Yep.
I'm one of those people that signed up for the military. And my first day in the military, and it was because, just like you said in a couple of programs, it was because of economics. I had a child, another one coming, couldn't find a job.
There it is.
I'm going to do what a responsible brother had. I'm going to do anything to support my family, and that's the road I chose.
And
to get a skill, too, Brother Oshie.
Yeah.
And to get a skill.
And
you know
also,
what I mean?
too, the benefits that you derive because of that sacrifice that you made, FHA loans, home loans, school loans, and
exactly.
So forth, medical attention, you know, the VA, whatever. To me, I understand it clearly, you know?
Yeah. It was, and what they told us, and I always remember this because I joined at the branch, the Navy. And what they told us when I went in there my first day of boot camp, they said, forget all that nonsense about fighting for freedom and democracy. That's not your job. Your job is here to keep the sea lanes open for commerce. They told us straight up.
Yeah.
What we were there for. So that's you know, I had to get that off my chest because they tell you what you're there for. It ain't no freedom and democracy, or you'll see it in this land.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's all about business, Brother Ocean.
Right.
But what I wanted to say. Also, I want to tell you, like, Dr. You just got finished playing the brother, and I
Dr.
listen
Wilson.
To him all the time.
Amos Wilson.
Brother, I love that brother because he talks to us in a language we all can understand.
Yes,
now,
I
I'm
agree.
Not quite down with some of the things Dr. Clark talked about. Matter of fact, I'm just not there yet. But far as Brother Amos Wilson, man, I love him. I love him, and I respect where that brother was coming from because he was coming from a healing point of view. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's to heal our minds. And that brother, I guess he was a psychologist. I don't know. But I always, like, just sit there and listen to that brother.
Yeah.
It's a shame. And when I found out a few years ago that man had passed on, I was hurt because that would have been one person that I would have gladly try to, you know, fund, represent, do whatever I could to help out because his voice, you know, he just was a voice of reason, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree that Dr. Wilson, his rationality, But more importantly, his persona and how he delivered information, just like you said, was very clear, very concise. It was just like he's talking to you.
Right.
Personally. Yeah.
Right. And he made stuff real simple that the average person could understand, even though he himself was educated, you know, so. Mm-hmm. But what I wanted to talk to you also about, Brother Oshie, today is this movie, Panther. Now, okay. Some people get mad at me, you know. And this is all I'm saying, Brother Oshie. And it's not to be hard on our people, because I know we need a Wakanda in our life to an imaginary country where everything is beautiful. And I know we need that. That's why a lot of us cling on to Christianity, and you know, because we want to die and go to heaven. So I'm like, a lot of us want to go back to Wakanda. You know what I mean? And I understand that, Brother Oshie.
Okay.
The thing I can't understand is 40, 50, 60-year-old people raving about a Disney movie. I don't understand it, Brother Brother Oshie.
Understand this, that we are in a land that perpetuates fantasy. We're in a land that gives you illusion without, of course, the inclusion. And so they're always about the setup. So here, you know, I haven't seen the movie. I'm going to see the movie tomorrow. I'm going to talk about this movie on Wednesday. There's a number of things that I have read about that have me very curious about this movie. And so I'm anxious to see it. I'm anxious to talk about it on Wednesday, along with my brother, Brother Franklin Jones. And we're going to look at this movie from an African-centered perspective, looking at it, how it is presented to us. And number one, Disney made this movie. Disney's profiting from this movie, along with Marvel Comics. Yes, it is a movie geared towards us. Yes, it's a movie directed by us. The screenwriter, also too, Coogler, is a screenwriter, written by us, you know, most of the star. But it is financed, and the profits. That's why, I don't know if you remember this, Brother Ralph, that a petition was put out there that 25, considering the amount of money that this movie is going to make, it's already, when you include today, for its opening Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and today, would bring in over $200 million.
Right. A lot of it coming right out of our pockets.
No doubt.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, to be honest with you, now, my wife dragged me to see it. I almost fell asleep on it. She woke me up a couple of times and told me I was snoring. But, she did. You know, I'm glad she can vouch for me on that one. But, you know, because it's nothing but a movie to me. I wasn't looking for nothing more out of it.
Okay.
And just to be out with my wife. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I want you to carefully look at, Brother Oshie, I was agreeing with the villain. I agreed with the villain.
That's...
I said, like, wait a minute, Disney making this man a villain. So check out the villain and what he really wanted, and then check out what this other guy wanted. And that's all I want to say, Brother.
Brother Ralph,
but,
please listen.
Yes,
please listen, Wednesday, because you hit the nail on the head. Because I've read at least two or three people that talk about this, and I can't wait to see it to give this particular perspective, man. So please, man, give us a call and give us that information. All right, man.
Yes, sir. I'm going to call in with you, Brother Oshie. So I'm going to let you go, man.
All right,
then,
brother.
Call and let you know I'm listening, bro. Thanks for your program. I really appreciate you and what you bring, brother.
Right on, brother. Peace to you, man. Be safe on those roads out there, brother, okay?
You too, brother. Okay. Talk to you later.
Peace. Yeah. Yeah, I'm definitely going to do that this Wednesday. Me and Brother Frank, the Black Matrix, the blackpeoplesmatrix.com. Check it out. Because what we talk about is the African mind. And believe me, I know that it was tough at times with going to the movies with my kids. I said, Dad, man, don't you just want to just be entertained, enjoy the movie? You're always being all analytical, trying to think about what they're trying to say to us. What is the covert meaning? What is the overt meaning? What is this, that, and the other? Just enjoy the movie. And as I explained to my daughters and to my now grandsons and to other friends that, you know, it's more than that. It is more than that. It's what is it saying to you? Because a lot of things work on your subconscious. A lot of things that are thrown at you. I did a piece on imagery and talking about subliminal seduction. Subliminal seduction is when the movie industry got caught or busted back in the 50s of using subliminal seduction. You're sitting in the movie theater and in a fraction of a second, it would flash popcorn, candy, soda, and so forth. Next thing you know, you're going out to the concessions by intent. It's just like even today, the smells and the scents and the pictures and all of the, everything. Have you ever noticed commercials for kids? Always the colors more vivid, they're louder. Cereal commercials. Your TV ain't played good at all. Color all messed up. But when that commercial came on, everything was like blinging. You ever notice those things? Of course, because that's what it's all about. We live in a world. We live in a country particularly, which is about commercialism, about money. And they don't give a damn about people. It's about money. We live in a world that a small fraction of individuals and groups or families or businesses or corporations control every damn thing. We live in a society that equality is literally impossible. Peace is not even something that they would even discuss. I saw a piece recently because I read a piece when I was back as a firefighter in the firehouse. I've been retired almost 12 years now, so this has to be 20-something years ago, maybe even longer, about peace, world peace. And what this general said, it's not an option. We can't afford to have peace. We can't afford. We have to have conflict. We have to have war, particularly in the West, because it fuels the machine. It's about money. All these businesses that are tied to it make money. Building better weaponry, tanks, and so forth. And you see the continuity with the surplus of all the stuff that they have built over the years. Now it's in the hands of your local police department. What the hell is your local police department doing with a damn tank, water cannon to disperse resistors or protesters? I saw too the other day online that some states are enacting legislation to prevent protesting. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised that they restrict protesting in various kinds of ways and put those who do protest in prison, because this is a very authoritarian, fascist regime, sexist, racist. You name it. We're going to look at another piece by Dr. Amos Wilson. The cure for poverty, hunger, and enslavement is the end of white rule. That's the cure, the end of white rule, the end of Caucasians dominating. I think because of its military might and the ability to kill us, to fight Caucasians militarily would be suicide. Our fight is to rid ourselves of the Caucasian mind, is to purge that mindset out of us, that European mindset, is to deal with, as the brother Dr. Jerome Fox stated last night on Time for an Awakening, that we are addicted to white, the oppressed, in league with the oppressor. They have distorted our minds so much, they count on it. They count on us doing. It is something that they just know is going to happen because they have trained us. They're not worried about us, because we have become addicted to white. Even some of our great men, Pan-Africanists, cultural nationalists, married to Caucasians. I love Kwame Nkrumah, the first leader of a free and independent African country after colonialism. Ghana, married Caucasian. I love Dr. who talked about the unity of Africa. His vision, like Patrice Lumumba's vision, like Dr. Sheikh Anjou Diop. Diop married Caucasian. But both of those men and others talked about the Federated States of Africa. That concept is just, to me, is the only viable concept. But they married Caucasian. And some make the argument, because a sister asked me the other day, have I ever dated a Caucasian? And I said, no, I haven't. I had never had a Caucasian have a girlfriend or whatever. No, I haven't. I understand people say, you know, you never know who you're going to fall in love with and that kind of stuff. But, man, I would love to have a woman that looked like my mama. I love my mama. But many of the brothers and sisters, you know, whose mama was dark-skinned, who felt that for them now it's better for me to have Caucasian. And if I can't have Caucasian, boy, she's going to look light, bright, and look damn near white, you see, because that's part of the training process that we experience. These are the words of Dr. Amos Wilson.
To the course, that's Dr. Amos Wilson. Let's give it up for Dr. Amos Wilson.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you kindly. Thank you very much for your warm welcome. It's great to be back here with you again this evening. It's been a while, and I always appreciate coming and being with you. And, of course, appreciate your support. And I know each time I've been here, I've promised you about our next publication, but it's definitely on the way. We are definitely now expecting to be out in November. And, of course, each time I talk with you, the book gets larger. At last count, Brother Sababu, my co-partner there, told me we were around about 800 pages. So we're going to try to split it up for you, maybe four and four. Gives you some good wintertime reading. But then, in a way, it's when we recognize that we are as complicated as any other people. And one of the things sometimes we underestimate the degree to which we must address ourselves as a people. And too often we have people who think that our issues and the things that we have to deal with can be described in 25 words or less. And that, and so there are people who think that we are small people and small-minded people, so they don't have to write sometimes some sizable material. If other nations and other people require libraries to deal with their issues, so do we. And the interesting thing about the upcoming book is that with that 800 pages, it's basically a survey looking at various areas of life. If you recall, we titled it Blueprint for Black Power. And we are essentially then trying to lay out a blueprint, a prescriptive book. Now we are coming into more and more into prescriptive type of writing, laying out very practical kinds of steps and very practical methods for achieving what it is we must achieve as African people. This means we have to cover a lot of territory. We are covering psychology, we are covering, of course, history, sociology, a great deal of political science, a great deal of economics and related fields, anthropology and so forth, because all of these have to be combined in the process of nation building. And this is what we really have to be about, is the process of building a nation as a people. If you're not thinking in terms of nationhood, then I must say, frankly, you're not thinking seriously of being liberated.
All right. All right.
Trying to integrate and merge with our enemies is not going to solve our problem.
All right.
And it's not going to happen, as a matter of fact. It is a fantasy that has kept us from taking care of business for far too long, the idea that we are going to one day be one with these people. That we are going to merge into invisibility with these white folk. And even if that were possible, we should question our motives for wanting to do so. You know, why would you want to merge with the world's greatest criminals and thieves? With the people who have the worst values the world has ever known. It amazes me sometimes how we can hear some of our parents telling our children we want to be just like them. Yeah, it's a joke. It's an insult to hear Dan Quayle or to hear President Clinton come and lecture black folk on values. How dare we let these people into our churches to try to lecture us on values?
Mm-hmm.
It's an amazing situation to try to talk to us about values. To try to talk to us about population control. Another joke. Yeah. Yeah. The first thing we think about when people talk about population control is the overproduction of African people. You know, so-called third world people. As I said, we can solve the overpopulation problem quickly if we could reduce the European population drastically. Mm-hmm. Yes, and people, of course, as I tell you, this world has to always be backwards, you see. The ones who need to be reduced most drastically have the world thinking the other way around. Because a good deal of the problem sometimes is not the number of people in the world, but the number of greedy people in the world, where you have a so-called minority of people who consume the vast majority of the world's resources. This large population that they talk about could eat better if these people weren't eating everything up. And so to a good extent, sometimes to have more for everybody to eat, you have to get rid of the greedy ones. Ones who are over-consuming, who are taking the food out of other people's mouths, you see? But here you have the people who rob you and take everything you got and then say, you don't have enough to support yourself. You know? And this is the kind of joke that we got going at here. And we're going to come back to this issue of values. But we're going to talk a little bit about African-centered consciousness, personality, and culture as instruments of power. Because ultimately, this is what this whole struggle is about. Power. not loving one another and all those things we hear. Power. And to a great extent, the problems that we are confronted with today as African people and African people in America flows from our powerlessness or our inappropriate use of power. Right. We've been made to even talk about it. We've been made to think that power is sinful and that to pursue it is a sinful pursuit.
All right. That's right.
And that it's wrong. But you cannot exist without power. Without power, there is no life. A battery without power is dead.
All right.
You need power to act, to behave in the world, to deal with the world. And consequently, then, we must interpret what we are about in terms of power. And we have the power, ladies and gentlemen. We have the possibilities. We just need to reorganize ourselves, reorganize our consciousness and our personality and our culture, and see them as instruments of power and use them as instruments of power to transform our situation.
Ashe, that is the words of Dr. Amos Wilson, a real fighter for our people, a brother who understood our condition clearly. From a psychological standpoint, from a mind standpoint, and was willing to put his life on the line for us. Because like I said, you know, a lot of us, they go through those rigors of education and they got their degrees and they just happy to go work at some university. And some of them even in departments of Africana studies and that kind of stuff, but they don't go outside of that, you know. They stay within that framework because it's comfortable. They get paid. And some of them put out bad scholarship because that's their mindset. They get paid. You know. But Dr. Amos Wilson was talking about power. A contemporary or fellow psychiatrist, I'm quite sure they knew each other, was Dr. Wade Nobles. I thought Dr. Wade Nobles' definition of power was definitive. And he said, power is not money. We like to think that power is money. Well, we should know by now that the money that we have in our pockets is not backed up by anything except the government's word. And what backs up the government's word? Is its military. The International Monetary Fund and the World Bank and the international bankers, all of them have the currency. May be different. The currencies may be different, but they run the concept globally. The international bankers, the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank. That's why they had to kill Muammar Gaddafi. Because he was going to introduce the gold dinar, a currency that would be utilized on the continent that could have freed many African countries to provide wealth for those countries because the resources would have to be bought with the gold dinar. So they had to kill him. First, of course, they discredited him. They put the images out there so they could justify killing him and you wouldn't feel so bad. Because a lot of times you can't handle the damn truth. You got to make it appear a certain way. Power. No, there's no power in money. Power, politics. Yeah, we have more of our people in elected positions than we've ever had. We have mayors of cities. We've had a governor or two, senators, a few, multiple congresspersons, state county and city government. And yet the condition for us overall is worse. I ain't talking about that 20% of us who are doing well, or at least the 10% of the 20 that are doing well, and the other 10% who are doing exceedingly well. I ain't talking about them. But those are the people that they that this society looks at and looks towards to chill out the other 80% of us. No, you can't have real power from politics. Because if we did, our condition would be better overall. The numbers wouldn't be as pathetic. The numbers of miseducation, unemployment, underemployment, health care, all of these things. So no, it's not politics. It's not partisan politics or I scratch your back, you scratch mine, or dirty dealing under the table. All this old madness. No. So no, money's not power. Politics is not power. Oh, you say education, information. Well, if the education and information that you have received and continue to receive is flawed and inaccurate, and it is, and you know it, no real power from that. Even education in the so-called HCBUs or other educational institutions that are controlled by this country. No, you can't get power from that. Dr. Clark said it best. A powerful people never give the powerless people the information to take their power from them. But yet we expect it. We think that this society will educate us so we can be on a par, so we can truly share in the thievery of what these Caucasians have done. No, education is not power. We have a call. We'll take this call. 215, go ahead.
215. Hey, Brother Oshie, how you doing? It's Brother Joe. Long time no talk to you, brother.
Hey, Brother Joe, how you doing? I heard you last night on the Time for an Awakening, though you sound great, but you been okay?
I've been doing fine, bro.
Good.
Thanks
me
for
too.
Asking, man. I hope you and your family have been doing well also.
I've been fine, dear brother. Thank you.
Yes, sir. I told Brother Ralph, a lot of times, but let's say I work for an elderly client, I'd be listening a lot of times, like in the background, but I don't always be able to call because my client is elder. He'd be needing my utmost attention and stuff.
Oh,
but
for
I said,
sure.
I'm off today. I said, I'm going to listen to Brother Ocean. I'm going to give him a call today. So I said, I'm going to use this opportunity to give you a call, Brother Ocean.
Oh, thank you, man. Thank you, Brother Joe, because I haven't heard from you a while. It's like I said, I've heard you on Time for Awakening with the Brother Elliot and Brother Richard a number of times, but I thank you took time out today. You're not working to give us a call.
Okay, you appreciate it. Brother. See, I was called basically to talk about a couple of things. First, the movie Black Panther. I went to see it with a friend of mine yesterday, and like I said, while the movie has some positives, like I said, you can still see that white supremacy, white addicted to white, as the professor said on the Elliot and show last, and Richard show last night, you can still see that throughout the movie. Because like you ever know, it's always a pattern, Brother Oshie. In these stories, the white guys always wind up the hero, no matter how bad he is. Or he always winds up the hero. Because I go back to Steve Biko movie, our revolutionary brother from South Africa.
Yeah.
The movie was supposed to be about him, but he gets killed early in the movie, and the white guy winds up becoming the hero.
Oh, that's just like Rosewood, the movie Rosewood.
Yeah.
John Voight's character turned out to be the hero because he helped a lot of the brothers get on that train to get out of Rosewood. Remember?
Exactly.
I mean,
it's
always the same.
We make movies about ourselves or directed, supposed to be directed by black directors, the European, I always think, come on, and I'm not trying to diminish what a European helps out, but I'm just saying, why is it always that they always tend to be the heroes in these movies? And you see, Brother Oshie, even with the situation what happened down in Florida. Now, this boy, they say he got a last name Cruz, but he looked white looking. You see how the police handled him with kid gloves?
Sure.
I mean, this guy was allowed to be, he was allowed to be arrested. Notice what I say, he was allowed to be arrested. He wasn't beat, he wasn't shot, anything. But you ever had black men and women, whether it be Sandra Bland, whether it be Eric Gardner, whether it be Trayvon, whether it be, you know, anybody, whether it be the Philando Castile, these brothers was unarmed and sisters unarmed, and they get blown away and stuff, beat up, blown away by these white boys. Dylann Roof, when he killed our people down in South Carolina a few years ago, they took that cracker to McDonald's or Burger King because he was hungry. I mean, and Brother Oshie, I want you and your audience to understand this was a mindset, because I don't think sometimes our people understand what mindset we're dealing with. Back in, I'm 56 years old, Brother Oshie, back in 1980, January, I'll never forget it, January of 1980, here in Philadelphia, a white boy in Southwest Philadelphia, he shot a black cop right in his face. He shot the brother right in his face. You're not going to believe how the white cops treated this guy. They even, when they arrested the white boy, they told him, well, you know, sir, we're going to have to arrest you. We're going to have to put handcuffs on you. Like, they were pleading with him, saying, well, you know, we got to do it. We don't really want to do it, but we got to put handcuffs on you.
Yeah. Well, you know the hypocrisy.
I mean, I'm like, you know, I don't know when our people going to get it. This kind of mindset that we're dealing with, they treat their own people, no matter how horrific the crime is, they always treat their people humanely and stuff. You know,
well,
no matter what
the
they
problem
do with
is
us, we have no guns and get shot 20, 30 times. You know, like I said, Eleanor Bumpers up in New York several years ago in 86, she had a butter knife, and these white cops, trained white cops, they felt they had the need to blow an 86-year-old black grandmother away that was suffering from dementia or Alzheimer's.
Yep. Well, see, the thing is this, you know, this will always be a society of hypocrisy. There's always going to be these double standards. They're always going to, those who are in control always treat those who are part of them in a different way, even though they may do something, just as you mentioned, something heinous, something ridiculous, something crazy. They will treat them differently than what they treat us. Because to them in this society, we are the scourge. We are the no fit fathers, no fit mother. We are the ones that culturally are deprived and depraved. And so they'll treat us with such disrespect. Even those who have attained a little something, something, at least they feel that way. And so how can you do this to me? I'm a professor. I'm a doctor. I'm this, that. They don't make no damn difference what you are. You black.
As Henry Louis Gates. Oh, she asked Henry Louis Gates.
Exactly. Exactly. Skip Gates. I can't stand Skip Gates. But anyway, he had his moment. He had nothing but a moment, you know? And that's what happened. So we got to understand
that. Like you said, Brother Oshie, the beat just goes on and stuff, man. Just what Dr. Frances Cress Welker was trying to tell us in her book, ISIS Papers. See, a lot of us don't understand a white psychotic mind. We just don't get it. See, when you bring that up, you got some of these stupid, simple Negroes, Oshie, they'll sit there and say, oh, that's best. You're preaching hatred and stuff, black supremacy, all that. But no, you're dealing with reality. Because if you know what kind of mindset you're dealing with, you know how to deal with these people.
Right.
You know how to beat them at their own game, or at the very least, stay ahead of them. Strategize where you can overcome this bigotry and this lack of humanity. But if you sitting there acting like a fool, like you understand what you're dealing with, they're gonna always keep their foot right up your behind.
Always, because they they mean us no good. In fact, there ain't no more cotton to pick. All right,
that right.
And so now we're being mass incarcerated. And for those who can't, the plan for us is always against our best wishes, is always against our humanity. We got to understand that, but we believe that in this country, because of the flowery words that the country has always perpetuated, this constitution, its amendments, all that old bull.
That's all it is to us, bull.
Yeah. And so
they don't believe nothing. They don't believe. They don't practice nothing. What they say on that stuff. Nothing but a piece of paper and stuff.
Exactly.
When you go in the court system, you try to hold them accountable. They treat you with such disdain and stuff. Man, they look at you like you done lost your damn mind. You start talking about some Constitution, the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, the Articles of Convention. Man, they don't pay that stuff no matter.
They don't.
You know what I mean?
It's not worth the paper it's printed on.
We still trying to fit a round hole into a square peg, Brother Oshie. It's not working, man.
And brother Joe, it never will, and that's our problem.
I agree. I came to that reality years ago, Brother Oshie. I said we like Einstein, so we like the definition of insanity. Long as we keep doing the same thing over and over again, like butting your head against a brick wall and wondering why your head keep busting open with blood. I said you keep doing the same thing over and over and expect a different result. It's not happening, people. It's not happening. That's why shows like yours, Brother Oshie, Brother Elliot and Richardson, and all the other Time for the Awakening family, that's why I appreciate y'all, because y'all, at the very least, Brother Oshie, y'all trying to bring awareness to our people, man. I understand that we have to unite. We have to have love and respect for one another, because only us is going to save us.
At the end of the day,
no benevolent white man or benevolent white woman is going to save us.
No.
We have to be saved by us.
No, it has to be about us.
And that's just the bottom line. Whether we like it or not, we have to be saved by us. I remember Minister Farrakhan years ago. He said, we keep looking for a friend in the White House. We better start looking for a friend in the Black House.
That's for sure.
And especially when it comes down, I know
that's
some niggas don't like to hear that, but it's the truth, though. We got to look for a friend in the Black House.
And see, the other thing is that in order for it to happen right for us, it has to be exclusively us. I don't want no crack. If a cracker want to help us, then you go talk to your folk.
That's right.
You know,
that's
you
right.
Go say something to them. If you want to impress upon them how they've mistreated, then you go do that. But to me, only us. I'm not looking for no multiracial, multi-ethnic solution to our problem. That's not going to happen. The only solution for African people is for African people to come together to deal with this problem, independent of any and everybody else. And it's not something that will be against anybody, but it's developing a respect and a love for one another and a willingness to trust and believe in one another, to work with one another, because we have been trained to hate ourselves.
Yes, we have.
You know?
Yes, we have. Yes, we have. Well, Brother O'Shea, I'm going to hold you up. Thanks
right,
for your
my
time,
brother.
My brother. And I'll keep on listening, Brother O'Shea.
I appreciate it, Brother Joe.
My schedule get lightened up a little bit over the next few weeks with my client. He's getting better health-wise, so I don't have to be so needy at times.
Okay.
So hopefully I'll be able to call you on these Mondays and Wednesdays like I plan to, Brother O'Shea.
I appreciate it, Brother Joe. You have a blessed and wonderful day, brother. Peace
you
to you.
You do the same, Brother O'Shea.
All right, peace. You know, the bottom line is that we're the only ones that are going to do this. And let me get back to what power is. Because we've been trained to believe that Caucasians have power. Well, yeah, do you know why? Because power is the ability to define reality. That's why I like Dr. Wade Noble's definition. Power is the ability to define reality. When the cracker came out of that medieval dark age, and that's their so-called enlightenment, they went around the world claiming everybody's stuff in the name of. They said, this is the reality. This is the image. And if you didn't bow down to it, yep, exactly. Under the threat of death did we accept Christianity. And so now we are the most Christian people believing in this madness than anybody else on the damn planet. Anybody else. I told Brother Elliot, I said, yeah, you know, this stuff is so crazy in this Christian thing. And then here you have the top money-making Christians, churches, top money-making, top 10. Creflo Dollar here in Atlanta, he ain't in that top 10. T.D. Jakes, the Potter's House, I believe it is, down in, what is he, Houston or Dallas, wherever he is, he ain't in the top 10. But of the top 10, three Nigerian ministers are in the top 10 from Nigeria. 80% poverty. Almost like it is here. But their poverty, I'm just going to keep it real. You know it. Their poverty is much deeper there than it is here. I mean, here we have impoverished people who are obese, you know. But that's a condition, you know. You know, they have some serious poverty, some serious, you know, but the bottom line is that power is the ability to define reality, then have someone else accept your definition as if it's their own. We have accepted their definition as if it's our own. And the question that we need to ask ourselves is, who are we in European Caucasians' reality? Who are we? First, we were the soulless people, no culture to speak of. Justifying our enslavement. Who are we now? We're thugs, we're drug addicts, we're no fit fathers, no fit mothers in their reality. So we need to shape and fashion reality in our own image and interest, not to impose it upon anybody, but let it be the strength that carries us beyond this madness. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end every program with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. Shemhotep, go in peace. Asante Sana, thank you. Have a blessed and wonderful day, family. Peace.